Well, I will call the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority meeting to order at 9:19 a.m. Central Time. This meeting is virtual, obviously, and we will keep everyone muted and we'll proceed with the meeting. So what I'd like to do is start the meeting today. There's been a lot of things going on at the port and in our country over the last since our last meeting. And I just want to highlight a couple things going on. At the top of the list, obviously, is the continuing dealing with the pandemic that we've had to deal with. And I think I really appreciate all of the folks that have done a great job at the port to make sure that we continue to operate during the pandemic. Obviously, the other big news that happened was the recent events surrounding the death of George Floyd, one of our Houstonians, and the protests that happened as a result of that. This is another wake-up call for us on social and economic justice and equity for all. It's something that Port Houston and all of us should be focused on. We have at Port Houston, as part of our strategic plan, focused on diversity and inclusion. I think it's now time, as a result of what's going on around us, to double our efforts and to really focus on what we can do both internally within our own teams and the broader community, port community, to really focus on economic and social justice for the folks that both work for us and the surrounding communities. I want to commend Roger Gunther for the letter he sent out to all port employees condemning what happened to George Floyd and what have you. I think it's just really important that we come together as a port community and as a team to focus on how we move forward with the current situation in a positive way. I also want to give a shout out to our Port Police Department, for keeping the port community safe and their stellar record with no major public issues or complaints for over 10 years. Our Port Police do a very great job, kind of our silent partners that are out there working every single day, making sure that they take care of all of us. You know, the road to equity is a journey, not a destination, and we all need to be inspired by the view ahead. And I think it's really important for the port. When you think about the port, our economic power that we have the ability to move forward and help the community move forward in this regard. One of the things we've done that I wanted to go through with you today is where we are in our disparity study. We have an amazing and robust small business program that has contributed over $535 million in small business awards in the community. That small business program is incredibly diverse in its capacity building for a lot of minority firms. The disparity study that we started in August of 2019 is about making that program even better than it is today. We entered into a contract with Griffin and Strong PC, a law and public agency consulting firm, to conduct a disparity study to assess whether minority and women-owned businesses have faced barriers in Port Houston's contracting. Griffin and Strong is reviewing Port Houston's procurement and small business practices, identifying market area businesses, interviewing Port Houston stakeholders, and conducted case law and policy reviews. Virtual public meetings were held on May 12th and 13th. More than 260 firms participated in virtual hearings from several firms, and several firms provided public comments on Port Houston contracting. Griffin and Strong will soon be completing its private sector analysis and conducting statistical significant tests. The final analysis and report is scheduled to be provided to Port Houston by September 11th. This study was not about saying something was wrong with what was going on at Port Houston. It's really about sort of highlighting what's right, and then also enhancing our ability to have outreach to the minority and women-owned businesses so that we can expand that and make it better. And I think that's really important to focus on and to think about. I'm really excited about the final results that should be completed by September 11th. A couple of other items I think are really important. For the past 3 years, past three sessions, the Texas legislature has included budget riders in the General Appropriations Act that authorize the use of funds for projects to improve access to maritime ports throughout the state. There have been three rounds of funding during the most recent legislative sessions, and Port Houston has fared very well in sponsoring the use of $13.2 million in state funds towards $34 million of Harris County projects. Port Houston has partnered with the county in this manner on three projects in a recent year, including the Peninsula Road Improvement Project, which is a $12.74 million project. $800,000 came from the Port of Houston, $1.75 million from Precinct 2 Harris County, and $10.2 million from the Rider. This jointly funded project made significant improvements to what was the most congested and dangerous road segment in the port region. It expanded Peninsula Road from two lanes to four lanes and added cross arms and signals to multiple rail crossings. Without the funding, the project would likely not have been completed. This project was substantially completed in May of 2020. Port Road Phase 3 and Drainage, which is an $18.9 million project, $9.2 million came from Port Houston, $9.7 million from the state rider funds. This project was completed. The phased expansion of Port Road to three lanes from State Highway 146 to the gate to the entry gate and from the exit gate to State Highway 146. It also includes significant drainage improvement that will facilitate future development of up to 95 acres of port property. This expansion will support Project 11's widening and deepening and fully build out Bay Port Container Terminals. This project is being awarded at today's Port Commission meeting. Sheldon Road Improvement Project Phase 1, that's a $2.6 million project, which is the first phase of a larger $20 million project, $1.43 million from Precinct 2 in Harris County, and $1,120,000 from the Rider. This project was approved by the Texas Transportation Commission in May of 2020, and negotiation of the advanced funding agreement is the next step. The partnership with Harris County and the state of Texas to improve access to maritime facilities along the Houston Ship Channel is critical for the continued economic growth and creation of jobs in our region. We're also proud to announce Port Houston's new community grant program, which was officially launched yesterday on June 22nd. The community grant program is focused on investing resources into meaningful projects and programs to enhance our local community and create greater value for our region. The first step in the grant application process is for organizations to submit a letter of interest, which will be submitted to July 17th. We look forward to strengthening our local partnerships and to bring positive impacts to our region. And just last week, we were informed that Port Houston was successful in being awarded an INFRA grant for nearly $80 million towards efforts to restore and improve the wharf and yard space at Barber's Cut Container Terminal. The U.S. Department of Transportation awarded $79.472 million from the Infrastructure for Rebuilding America program to Port Houston, which was the full amount requested for Port Houston for a total of $198 million project, with a local cost share of 60% and the INFRA grant of 40% of the future construction costs. Funding from federal grants like this continue to highlight the national impact of our container terminals in support of economic benefits such as exports and domestic manufacturing. We are grateful to the U.S. Department of Transportation and Maritime Administration for the grant award, plus our appreciation enjoyed by bipartisan support for several levels of government, including Senator Cornyn, Congressman Brian Babin, Congresswoman Lizzie Fletcher, Senator Larry Taylor, and Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner. Getting grants like this. I understand that it may be the largest grant that has gone to a port. I think it's just an indication of how important the economic activity at the port is for the region to make sure that we continue to grow jobs, and especially in this world where we need to add jobs given the pandemic and the loss of jobs there. And ultimately, it will help us promote social and economic justice for all. And that's what Port of Houston is all about. It's about quality of life and creating, and the only way you can have a start with trying to get a quality of life is to have a job. And that's what Port of Houston is all about. So with that, I will end my comments, and let's go to the meeting agenda. We have then item C1, which is approval of the minutes from our May 20th Port Commission meeting. And again, commissioners, what we'll do on these votes is I will ask for a motion and a second, and then I will ask for any negative votes. And if we get negative votes, that we will not approve the item, but we won't ask for positive votes. So with that said, I have a motion to approve the minutes.
Any motion?
Second.
Okay, is there any questions or comments? If not, I'll call for any negative votes. Negative votes, meaning the minutes are approved. Item D1 is staff reports. Roger, you can do this one. I don't hear Roger.
Okay, I'm unmuted now. So good morning, everybody. It's good to talk to everybody once again. Look forward to the day when we're not meeting virtually. But real quickly, thanks for those comments. To follow that up, just a little bit about our operations business through our Port Houston facilities remains below projected volumes through the month of May, as expected. The general cargo through our public facilities is about 40% off of last year's pace, mainly due to the import steel moving about half of what the volumes were in 2019. Our containerized volume in May was down about 16% versus the prior year. I can say, in spite of this, because of the fast start we had in January and February, our container volume is still up 1% through May. Now, our June volumes so far, this far into the month, indicate that the volume will be probably pretty similar to May, and likely that we can expect this continue maybe through the summer. It's really impossible to precisely speculate at this time, but we're hopeful that perhaps some of the trade lanes are starting to increase a little bit or show signs of increase, and we've got a peak season coming for the fall, so we're hopeful that we'll start the uptrend. But anyway, it's too tough to speculate and think that we're going to see more of the same through the summer. We're still having some blank sailings that are contributing to this volume. We've had 32 since the very beginning of this pandemic. We now have 8 in June that have occurred or we're aware of, 5 more in July, and 1 that we've been notified in August. So these are across all trade lanes, not just Trans-Pacific, now some of the transatlantic as well. But overall for the port, we've handled about more than 17 million tons of cargo through our facilities, all of our facilities combined, and we're off about 5% from the pace in 2019. So we'll continue to monitor, not as busy as 2019, but I can assure you there's a lot of business still moving through our port. I wanna follow up another Harris County and community local city related issue. We've been working for some time with our partners, conceptualizing and planning, and we're at the final step to making the sidewalk project in cooperation with Jacinta City and Galena Park and Harris County reality. It kind of illustrates the partnerships and the goal that we have in our strategic plan, our connections to our community. And the project will enhance the safety for thousands of pedestrians in the area, including many school children. Specifically, our local cities a while back identified a need that included solutions for safety for residents needing to an avenue to walk through our Port Houston property that's currently being used for judge disposal facilities. And they had to walk on the roads and didn't have any sidewalks. So we appreciate the partnership as we continue to make this happen. County's taking the lead. Contributions that we've made will certainly enhance the quality of life for our local citizens, and we're proud of that. And just to wrap up, a few employee matters. June is usually when we recognize some of our employees for longer terms of service, 20 years or more. I'm going to try to save that for another month or two, and hopefully we're able to do that in person. I don't want to forget those employees, so it's just better to have them show up and put a name and a face with those in front of the commission, so we still have that outstanding and look forward to doing that soon. As far as our staff, again, about two-thirds of our employees continue to report to their critical and essential jobs every day and keep the commerce moving through the port. They're moving the world, and I'm truly grateful for their dedication and effort, and we'll continue with these measures that we have to be vigilant, you know, with the social distancing and all the procedures, the temperature screenings, all the things that we're doing to try to keep those folks from risk of spreading the virus. And the last thing, we have a lot of people telecommuting because they can. We've been very fortunate to be able to keep the port running, allowing the folks to do that. But due to a recent rise in the cases in our region, we're continuing to pause and delay the phasing in the return to work, putting a bunch of people together in the executive office building until further notice. So we're continuing to focus on, hey, how do we make this work safely versus rushing into when we do it? So stay tuned. We're functioning well in all aspects, and thank our employees every day for what they're doing to keep the port going. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great. Okay, great, Roger. Thank you. And I would also like to echo Roger's shout out to our employees, because I know that without our employees, you know, coming to work every day or working from home every day, and I know there can be some tension from the essential employees who go to work every day on our docks and worse versus telecommuting. But I got to tell you, telecommuting is no picnic either. So both groups will really appreciate it. You all have your issues, and we appreciate you coming to work every day and making sure that things are going well for Houston. Okay, I will move now to
Rick.
Yes.
Rick, this is Steve Don Carlos. I just want to make a quick comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanking Roger and staff for the perseverance on the sidewalk project. You know, that was brought to us by City of Galena Park, I think 5 years ago. Time flies when you're having fun. But they've been very, very patient with us. There were a lot of moving parts to this project, but it was really, really important to the cities of Galena Park and Jacinto City. So just thank you so much for hanging in there. It's a great project. Well needed in those communities.
Great. Any other commissioners want to make some comments before we go into the sort of the body of the meeting? Happy to hear from you on anything you want to talk about. Okay, well, we can go, let's go then to item E1, which is public comment. We have three speakers today.
Hey, Rick, I think we have some appearances. I don't know if you...
We do, we have three speakers. I'm sorry, E1, which is public comment. We should have three speakers. Cleophas Sharp is our first one. Can we figure out how to unmute?
Yes, he is unmuted now.
Okay.
This is Mr. Sharp. Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I would like to speak on the decision, which I sorely support. And matter of fact, I am personally introduce myself. I am a board member of ACTS, which is a member of Healthy Ports Communities Coalition. And I'd like to speak on the whether or not adequate consideration has been given to the detection of bacteria that will be stirred up by the widening of the ship channel to the communities that are near the landfills that will receive the sludge. Also, will there be any monitoring of the airborne bacteria that will be stirred up at the dredge sites, as well as the sites near communities which will receive the sludge? And this is based on the San Jacinto a brownfield that occurred. It didn't occur because the San Jacinto River Authority, just like the Port of Houston authorities, did anything, but it was the companies that were dumping stuff into the water that you don't even know about. So when it's dug up, want to know what type of what type of monitoring is being done from airborne contaminants that be stirred, as well as contaminants in the soil, and how will we be able to access the data from these monitoring devices so that we'll know what's in the soil and in the air is more important there. I know you test the soil, but what about testing of the air so we'll know the communities near these sites will know what type of hazards that are being created in the living environment in which they live. Thank you.
Absolutely, I appreciate your comments and they're well noted and very important. I think that the dimming lighting project and more broadly the overall environmental stewardship that Port Houston is implementing every day is really a critical thing for the communities in and around the port. I know that the Corps of Engineers in the project plan and in the chief's report, there's a very large component that's the environmental program, which we will make sure gets implemented effectively and communicate that to different communities. Roger, you want to comment on this as well?
Yes, Chairman, and you're correct. And Mr. Sharp, thanks for calling in. We certainly, there's strict guidelines and testing that's done. Any type of dredge disposal is put into a placement area. And what we can do to make sure that those assurances of the community are communicated is I would be happy to sit down with you and talk to you, now and prior to whenever something like that started, when disposal happens in those sites close to your community, be happy to do that. And please, if you could just reach out and leave a number, we'll make sure and gather with you. So thank you for your interest.
Commissioners, do you have any comments or questions, Mr. Sharp? Okay, hearing none, our second speaker is Adrian Shelley, the director of the Texas Office of Public Citizen. Are you muted at this point? There, I see you there. Go ahead. Let's make sure that Adrian Shelley is unmuted.
Chairman, I believe he may be one of our call-in users. I can unmute all of our call-in users to try to identify him if you'd like.
Yes, go ahead and do that.
Okay.
Yes, hello, this is Adrian.
Okay, great. Adrian.
Can we go ahead? Are we good?
Yes, you can. Go ahead. We got you.
All right. Thank you. Yes, so my comments are on agenda item I-8, the goods movement air emissions inventory. The budget that's been allocated is $189,507. I just want to note some of the other investments that were listed in it earlier in this meeting, you know, ranging in kind of the tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, just to put into perspective. We're looking at an item here that's a little less than $200,000. So the port in the last 20 years has completed 4 goods movements emissions inventories, 2013, 2007, 2003, and 2012. An inventory for 2019 would put the port on a 6-year cycle for its last 3 inventories. That's pretty infrequent and doesn't really give us very useful data about emissions trends in the port. And then more to the point, an emissions inventory is typically accompanied with a clean air strategy plan that is developed by the port, regularly updated, reported on, and evaluated using the emissions inventories that are regularly conducted. The first clean air strategy plan for the Port of Houston was 2009. There was some discussion around 2012, 2013 under the environmental leadership of Leah Oberlin that ended in 2015. A strategic plan for the port gave some lip service to the idea that the port is an environmental leader, similar to some of what we've heard today. The reality is that there are no detailed plans for things like emissions inventories, clean air strategy plans, documents like that. Now, they may be in development, they may be available, but they're not publicly available. So, for example, the RFP that announced the emissions inventory was responded to by 3 companies. I'm not aware of where that RFP was posted. I've not been able to find it publicly. Or to see the responses that were given, or to see the criteria that were used to choose the company that's going to complete that inventory. So we know we have a problem with clean air, or rather goods movement emissions inventories being done too infrequently. And we know we have a problem with a clean air strategy plan not being in place essentially since 2009. Now, at the beginning of this meeting, Mr. Campo told us quite plainly that the George Floyd situation was a wake-up call for social and economic justice for the whole world, for those of us individually, and for those of us in the region. And I think we need to take that seriously. We can see in the data that we have that there are social and racial justice issues in the data. So, for example, comparing the 2007 to the 2013 emissions data, we see spikes in volatile organic compounds, 33% increase, and in particulate matter, fine particulate matter, PM2.5, a 25% increase.
Mr. Shelley, if you could wrap it up, please, sir. Thank you.
Yes, there's data indicating that the emissions coming from the Port of Houston are creating unhealth public health situation that is disproportionately impacting low-income minority communities. This is an environmental justice issue. It dates back to redlining. It needs to be corrected now. The Port of Houston just created a Commission of Citizens Advisory Council. I would suggest that that council be deeply involved in a process of evaluating the goods movement emissions inventory and developing a new clean air strategy plan that has a regular schedule of evaluation and updates. And frankly, the port has a lot to do to account for the social justice, environmental justice issues that are occurring right along its borders. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shelley. I appreciate that. And I will tell you that from the commission's perspective, We definitely want to be good neighbors, and clearly I think it's very important, especially with Project 11, that we focus on this environmental justice issue in the communities that we are surrounding. Obviously, Fort Houston is one part of the port community, and we have 200 other private facilities that are operating in and around the port that need to be brought into that equation. And I think that as you point out, it's time to do it, and I agree with that. Commissioners, any other commissioners questions or comments?
Mr. Shelley, this is Commissioner Clunan. If you don't mind, I have your contact info. I'm going to reach out to you to have a discussion with you if that works.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Thank you all. Look, I just want to point out that the port claims 1.2 million jobs in the region. It claims hundreds of billions of dollars of economic benefit for the region. It is more than willing to claim all of the primary, secondary, tertiary benefits that it creates to the region. But when it comes to pollution, when it comes to the effect of public health on its neighbors, the port disclaims responsibility for everything, and it's a double standard that needs to stop. So I will look forward to following up. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Commissioner Campo.
Yes.
It's Eric. Before we go on to our other commenter from yesterday, we actually have another person who signed up, and I think we may have sent you a message that may, it's associated with at least indirectly with Mr. Shelley. And I was wondering if we could go ahead with Ms. Blaza before we hit our last comment.
Yes, absolutely. I did not see that, but let's go ahead.
So that's Letitia Blaza. If she is not muted.
I'm going to go ahead and unmute all the call-in users so we can identify Ms. Blaza. Ms. Blaza, are you there?
Okay. Maybe not. You may be a call-in. I'm sorry. She did send us a message a little while ago.
Well, I'll tell you that if Ms. Blaza still is on the line and wants to speak, we can break into the rest of the session if you can identify her later. So, Ms. Blaza, please send Eric an email and indicate if you're still there or not.
Okay.
Before we figure that out, let's go to our third or fourth signed up speaker, which is, I believe, Keith Burke of B Services. Do we know?
Or maybe Donna Burke, who's associated with the same firm.
Okay, either Donna or Keith. Can we identify someone from Triple B Services that asked to speak?
Okay.
I have my partner, Kevin Burke, and also Donna Burke here with me on the call.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
I appreciate y'all providing me a moment to speak this morning. This is in reference to the upcoming decision before the commissioners to decide on the award of the Port Road expansion and drainage project for Bayport Terminal. We had forwarded a letter over late yesterday afternoon and had requested that each of the commissioners provided a copy. It was late, but we received late notice of the intent to award this project to a bidder other than Triple B, that being Harper Brothers. And therefore, my first question is, have the commissioners had the opportunity to receive a copy of our letter?
Hey, let me answer, it's Erickson. Yes, sir, we did forward it on when we got it.
Very good. Well, I don't want to invest any more energy in this call and your time than necessary, but what the meat and potatoes boils down to is that Triple B Services has performed multiple projects in the past for the Port of Houston. We have recently submitted the lowest what we believe is responsive and comprehensive bid to complete the project. Our numbers are approximately $450,000 less than our competitor, Our business was formed in 1996. We have not had any sort of negative issues that are material, certainly not with the port. We've completed multiple projects with the port in the past and have had no disbarments or dissatisfaction that's been documented. And so we are just simply confused and lack understanding as to why we haven't been notified or communicated with throughout the evaluation process to help us understand why the staff would recommend the award to the second bidder, who has substantially less experience in business than we do. I'm not sure, you know, again, we're just ignorant as to what the justification for this decision might be, and was hopeful to convince everyone that proper prudence and wisdom would suggest that we might defer this decision today and give us an opportunity to answer any concerns that the staff may have about Triple B and or our capabilities, if that is the problem. But we certainly bid this job to get it. We have a substantial investment in bidding the work, and therefore we certainly hope that we're able to convince you that Triple B is the best choice for this project.
Thank you.
Well, okay. Well,
Rick, yes, this is Roger. Thank you for your phone call, sir, and Mr. Burke. And I think we may want to defer this discussion to the item. But in general, as a note, as far as the communication, we do have procurement policy in place where there is a silent period from the time that the item specifications go out for procurement until they are posted for recommendation to the Port Commission. So we can talk about that separately, but that is the current policy that me and everyone from our staff certainly were conducted now. But anyway, that's we can save the item until the agenda item if you prefer.
Yeah, why don't we do that, Roger? I think just generally the we'll talk about that item specifically and what the analysis was and the process and make a decision on what we do forward at that time. So we appreciate your comments. And I know, think that it's very important to follow the port's procurement policy. And bottom line, low bid doesn't always win. There's a broader kind of mandate in terms of what the criteria on selecting contractors. But I really appreciate your comments, and commissioners, we'll talk about that when we get there. Commissioners, any other? Any questions or anybody want to bring anything up at this point on this item? Okay, hearing none. Did we get Ms. Plaza back on?
Let me double check. I don't. Yes, she's on now. Yes, sir.
Okay, great. So let's go ahead and unmute our next speaker. Ms. Blaza, are you on?
Oh, dear.
Kelly, have you identified Ms. Blaza?
No, sir. I've unmuted all of our call-in users, but I haven't heard her yet.
Ms. Blaza, if you're online, go ahead and speak so we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, we can. Go ahead. You have the floor.
Right. I apologize. Yes. I was wanting to speak today on the importance of emission inventory. I appreciate you putting on the agenda. I, first of all, would just want to speak towards the importance of putting port resources towards a good a goods movement emissions inventory. Emission inventories help us learn what the biggest mobile source of emitters at the port are, and they can also help us determine where the best resources to improve air quality and also protect the community's health, which is always important, but is front and center at when these exposures to air pollutants, which can increase a person's risk, especially right now during our time of pandemic, like the COVID virus. I was trying to introduce myself at the beginning. My name is Letitia Blazin with Air Alliance Houston, and we are an air quality advocacy group organization. And so this is something that's very important to us. And as I mentioned, during these times that are very uncertain in regards to a virus that attacks your upper respiratory system, we'd like to obviously help in any way that we can to push this forward. And also, I would like to ask, how frequently does the port intend to update emissions inventory?
This is Rick. I think that we are in kind of a new era when you think about it, because we were talking about when we start moving forward with the deep and winding project, that needs to be more important. Roger, you might want to elaborate on this as well.
Yeah, I think, this is emissions inventory, something we've been doing for every 5 or 6 years. Someone mentioned earlier about the frequency of it. There are other agencies doing studies, including the TCEQ. So we think the frequency is okay, but we can always look at it. The plan is 5 years. It's slipped a little bit, but there are things that we do, and just to make sure that we quantify this, and we were going to explain it with the item, but we look at a measure of the emissions from equipment that the port owns. We measure the emissions from the electricity that we purchase. By the way, we have contracted for 10 years for a zero emissions, green electricity contract. We're the first port, I think, in the country to do that. We also look at the inventory of vehicles coming to and from our port. So all of those are captured. The things that we have used those in the past, we do have a strategy. It's a big part of being an environmental leader. And again, this is for Port of Houston or Port of Houston Authority or Port Houston facilities, not the entire Houston Ship Channel, but things that we've used this for, implementing DARA grants to replace engines on drayage trucks coming to our port. We've got some hybrid RTGs that significantly lower the emission. Electric yard mules, electric cars, those type of things are part of a very intense strategy that we have for port. So we're using these things very efficiently to make sure that we are an environmental leader. So anyway, with that being said, that's the frequency, and we're using it very wisely to make sure that we have a good strategy from an environmental and emission standpoint.
Commissioners, any other commissioners want to make a comment or question?
Yes, Commissioner Cordier, I have a brief comment, Rick.
Go ahead.
Mr. Blaza, I appreciate what y'all are doing, and I'm fully supportive of your efforts. But I would have to tell you, I've been working the Houston waterfront since 1973. And the difference in air quality and water quality between now and then is there's no comparison. And we've made immense progress over the years. And I've been a commissioner now for 6.5 years. And I can tell you from personal experience that the port is extremely engaged in addressing the issues of emissions and water quality. Is it perfect? No. But I'm a firm believer in the old saying that perfection is the enemy of progress, and we are making progress, and we will continue to make progress. And this is definitely on our agenda, And I personally, as a commissioner, am very interested in this issue and look forward to working with your group and other groups as we clean up the air and the water in the Houston area. I grew up along the Houston Ship Channel. I'm well aware of all the problems that have been there for a long, long time. And I think together we can continue to make progress and get our environment where we need it to be. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, commissioners? Great. I think we all recognize the importance of being a good environmental steward, and we need to continue to move in this direction and also engage the rest of the port community as well. And I think that's going to be, you know, probably the more difficult part of the job, but we need to deal with it. So thank you for your comments, and we will continue to have this dialogue going forward.
Thank you. And thank you, Dean Corgi. I know that you are also a Milby buff, as I am.
That's right.
And I know very well about you living in the East End, so I certainly appreciate your comments, and we definitely look forward to working with you as well. I'll reach out to you at some point. And again, thank you so much for your comments.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. Any other commissioner comments, discussion on appearances? If not, let's go ahead and move to item F1 and 2. Tom, you want to talk about item 1 first, or Roger?
Yes, sir. Thank you, and welcome everyone. In the executive session, in the executive area, there's two items. The first one is to exempt some certain residential homesteads for ad valorem taxes. This was approved by Harris County Commissioners Court, so we usually follow their leadership on setting exemption. The second one is to request an extension on the interlocal agreement between the Port Commission and the Board of Pilots Commission for an additional 6 months through December 31st. This was originally approved at the December 2019 meeting to go for 3 months and give the pilot board an option to add another three, which they did take that option. So we are looking to extend it for another 6 months to help them get their situation in order. So
yeah, Tom, let me talk about that one. So just to remind everyone that the legislature required a separation between the port commissioners and the pilot commissioners in the last legislative session. They did not require the chairman to change until January of 2021. So what we did was the port commissioners 2019 that were pilot commissioners to comply with the legislation. And I stayed on as the chairman of the pilot board to ensure a smooth transition, knowing that the pilots are a critical component of transit in the channel, like one of the most critical components of channel transit, since they pilot all of the deep water vessels that come in and go out. The COVID situation that happened in March, April, and May, and is continuing, has put a delay in the ability for the pilot board to kind of figure out how they're going to operate in a new environment. And so the pilot board transition committee, which is chaired by Roland Garcia, has asked that the port continue to extend the interlocal agreement through the end of the year. We're hoping that all of the issues that need to be discussed and completed get done in the fall. But again, we're just giving them another 3 months beyond that, so that there's no interruption between how the pilot board operates and the pilots to make sure that we have consistent service. The letter of the law has been followed. The Port Commission is not involved in the pilot board anymore. And ultimately in January, or maybe even before January, when the pilot board gets their schedule together and their funding mechanism together, they will have a new chairman, and hopefully it'll be before January of 2021. I just wanted to kind of get that out there and give you the background. We are making sure that the new pilot commission has full authority over the pilots, and that the port commissioners are not involved in any of those activities. And it's just taking longer than we thought it would take. So given COVID. So if there's go ahead.
I'd like to speak to this. Did you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. I think 6 months is too long. I think 3 months is what it should be done. If they don't get it done in 3 months, we can always extend it in another 3 months, but the pressure needs to be on somebody to finish it. I personally think that it's a conflict of interest for us to be paying for everything that we were kicked off of. This is the state's baby. It wasn't our baby. This is the way they wanted it. And the pilot board needs to make a run. And of course, you were going to stay on for 3 months. Now it's going to end up 9 months. They need to address that problem and get it over with. And I think we should be extending it for 3 months. And at the end of 3 months, if in fact we run into a problem, we can always extend it the extra one. But if we do it for 6 months, I don't know that they'll start trying to get it done because they haven't done it so far. That's all I've got to say about it.
Okay.
Rick, I have a quick comment too. I have to echo what Commissioner Meese said. I mean, I guess I'm somewhat disappointed that when the legislature made it very clear with the full support of the pilots that they did not want the port commission involved in the pilots, basically in any way, that we continue to fund the replacement organization here. We're past a full year in which this group was set up by the legislature. Now we're going to being asked to fund them for another 6 months. I'm like Roy. I mean, I'd be in favor of giving them 3 months in recognition of the COVID situation, but taking a year to figure out where you're going to meet and how you're going to support yourselves is a little long for me. So again, I fully understand it's not a problem of their making necessarily, but we're being asked really to fund something that we were asked not to be involved in. So I'm feeling like the port's kind of being used and abused in this situation.
Here, I'd like to agree with Commissioner San Carlos that good with a 3 month extension, but I don't think 6 month extension is reasonable, and it's already been elaborated why. So
okay. All right, so why don't we do this? Let's go ahead.
This class, the chairman. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I feel like the other three commissioners that we should
I just lost you, Clyde. You just lost Clyde. Okay, so are you back on, Clyde? Okay, so here's what we what I'm hearing. So if someone would like to make a motion on item F2, that amends the item to 3 months, I will entertain that motion.
Can I move the motion that we change it to 3 months for the extension to the interlocal agreement for the Board of Pilot Commissioners?
Okay. All right, there's a second, and the motion is to amend item 2 to authorize a 3 month extension to the amended interlocal agreement with the Board of Pilot Commissioners for the Harris County Ports regarding the performance of certain governmental functions and services. So that is the motion. Are there any other comments? If not, I'll call for any negative votes. Hearing no negative votes, item two passes, which is a 3-month extension instead of 6. Let's go ahead and take a motion for the item F1 at this point.
Quindy, motion.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? Hearing none, any negative votes? All hearing no negative votes, the item F1 passes. Okay, so let's move on to commercial. Tom, go through, you know, getting the high points, and then commissioners, what we're going to do is we're going to group these in numbers, and Tom will go through the groupings after he discusses the kind of high points. Okay, Tom, go
ahead.
Thank you.
For commercial, there's 5 items. 1 is a business convention sponsorship. 3 are standard leases. The one I'd like to highlight is the amendment of the lease to TPC Group. And this is in a follow-up from what you approved last month when we did the land swap with Lyndell. This will give the extra property that we needed for TPC to build their new wharf so that we can move forward with a very important business partner. So I ask the commission to approve items G1 through G5.
Is there a motion? There's a motion and a second.
So move.
Okay. Any questions or comments, commissioners? All for any negative votes? Hearing none, items 1 through 5 pass. Let's go to finance H1 then.
So finance, there's only one item, and that is the final option year for the property and casualty insurance broker of record, who is McGriff. So the original contract was a 5-year contract with 2 1-year options. So we're asking commission to approve the final year option. And then in late 2020 or early 2021, we will be putting this back on the street for an RFP. So I'm asking for approval of item H1.
So move for approval of H1.
Okay, any questions or comments? If not, I'll call for any negative votes. Hearing none, item H1 passes. Infrastructure, Tom?
There's 18 items in infrastructure. I'd like to quickly go through 7 of them. Items 1 and 3 are important because this is the result of the combined efforts of our project and construction management team, our asset management team, and our operations team, which is working through the program we set up a few years ago that we call FECAP, Facility Inspection and Condition Assessment Program. Well, we've completed the primary reviews of all the marine assets. And so now we're starting to prioritize what we fix. So item 1 is to do more in-depth structural assessments on wharves 20, 21, 24, 25, and 26. Just to give you an idea, wharves 20 and 21 were built in 1957 and 59 respectively. And they were rated the highest priority in the program in terms of the issues that were viewed in the primary evaluation. So that is one of them. The other one that is an in-depth structural assessment that came through the FECAP program is a 1950 era bridge that goes to Spillman Island. And so we need to do more of a structural assessment on how we fix that bridge. Item I4 is we're asking for the approval staff ranking for the contract with Standard Constructors for the land development preparation south of Port Road. This is a 185-acre piece of land that we need to get ready to be able to market it for commercial development. So we are going to grub it, clean it, put drainage in it, And so then we will be able to go out and market and get some warehousing and possibly rail down the road, but we have to clean off the property. The next one is I-6, which is the item that was discussed earlier. Staff ranking is for Harper Brothers Construction for the Port Road expansion and drainage. Just to give you an idea, the project is approximately 70% drainage and 30% road expansion. So it's more of a drainage than it is a road expansion. And I'm sure we'll have some more discussions on that. So I will just go on. Item I-8 is the staff ranking for Christensen for the goods movement area mission inventory. As Roger said, this is used as a baseline for us to measure emission reduction strategies. And he went through some of the items that came out of the last study. I-12 is we're trying to get our arms around the funding agreement with the Corps of Engineers to support pre-construction engineering and design for Project 11. The commission has previously approved two $400,000 pools of money to pay the Corps as they review the design, since this is not a federal project yet. We didn't want to keep coming back with chunks of 400,000, whatever the number might be. So our staff and the Corps have sat down and come up with a number that we believe is a reasonable amount for all necessary funding through the end of design. So what we are asking for on this is a $2.28 million to make sure that the Corps stays up with all the design work that they need to do. And finally, I-13 is a good news story. It's to ask the commission to allow us to enter into agreement to receive congressionally appropriated energy transfer port rebate funds. This is part of the harbor maintenance tax pay, and the amount that the Port of Houston Authority is getting is $1.237 million. This is a split amount with the other three energy transfer ports in the state of Texas. So state of Texas actually got $4.95 million. This is our one quarter share. So what I'm asking the commission is to approve items I-1 through I-18.
Commissioners, and Tom, could you go into more detail on item 16? You know, we had our speakers, Mr. Burke, and talk about a bid that was $18.4 million versus $18.8 million. So walk us through the evaluation analysis that led to a higher bid.
I-6, Rick.
I-6, I'm sorry. I-6, sorry. Looks so, like 16 on my page.
Yes. So, walking back, this is a competitive sealed proposal method of procurement. And it's not a strictly hard bid, low bid. There are certain parameters that are established and prior to the bid package going out, including the bid package, for instance, 45% of the evaluation is price. 30% of the total is for small business, which is mandatory and actually a pass fail. So the remaining portion of that is, with a team of our staff, thoroughly evaluating things such as the relevance of the experience to the scope of the project. And in this case, as Tom mentioned, it's very heavily weighted on, drainage project experience. There's other factors in there. And we had several bidders that have previous experience with port projects. So we're not saying any of them are bad, but you know, the evaluation is such that we want to return and recommend to the commission what the staff thinks is the best value for the Port Authority for any particular reason, you know, including, you know, safety records, self-performance, and all those things are factors that go into a decision. In this case, there's a difference of $452,000, which is about 2% of the project.
Okay, commissioners, any questions or comments about Roger's discussion there?
Yeah, this is Commissioner Meese. I have some comments on it.
Okay.
I understand that we're in this silent mode from the time you take a bid until it to actually to the, I guess the day that you award it, which kind of makes a commissioner useless, because if in fact a low bidder wants to speak to you or try to find out why in fact did I not get the bid, you can't even speak to it. I think that project needs to be changed. I think we should be able to be contacted if to look into it, or if we were asked to. I mean, what are we supposed to do as commissioners if not that? Secondly, I think it's time that we also should be sending letters out to every bidder when they bid, when this bidding process is over, thanking them for taking the time to bid the projects and to continue to bid with it. It probably takes 20 to 25,000. I'm not the smartest guy about that. To put one of these bids together, you don't just do it overnight. You have to put your personnel on it. They have to figure it, probably have to have their engineer looking at it. So when you take the time and add it up, I wouldn't be surprised that it doesn't cost these people some $20,000 to bid these projects. And I think that when you leave a bidding process, when they come to opening and you're the low bidder and you never hear from anybody until you get the agenda late Friday when it's posted to show that you didn't even get the bid. I think that's wrong. I think we should be able to address the problem. Don't know that we change it, and there's nothing wrong with jumping a bid. We've done it before. I've supported it before, and I'll be supporting in the future. Because a lot of times the low bid's not the best bid, and I'm assuming for some weird reason that's what they're saying here, too. However, this company that you're jumping has done several jobs for the port. One of them had a 500-day deal in it, over 500 days. He completed it in 302 days. Another job that he did, a $7, $8, $9 million, same deal. He completed it way before time, to 100 days before time. So it's not his ability that I know of. It's for some other reason. And they think Harper Brothers will do a better job, and they may do a better job. But if memory serves me correctly, wasn't it Harper Brothers that had the problem out on the freeway when they broke a pipe? I don't know that it was their fault. I don't know what happened, but I know they were the contractors on it that caused a heck of a mess. So I'll be voting against it only because of our system that we're locked into, and it's not the right type of system when, in fact, a contractor cannot call a commissioner and say, hey, can you explain to me why we don't get it? Or who can I talk to understand it before they let the bid? It just don't make sense to me to do it that way. And I have the same problem on four. However, on four, that guy didn't turn in a bid bond, as I understand, and asked to be released. So I have no problem with it being higher, going to the second bidder under that process. In fact, probably the only true bidder that we had in that particular project. But on six, I do have a problem with that, and it's because our policies hamstring us as commissioners to even address these problems until after the fact. It's kind of like, I know you're going to get shot, but I'm not going to tell you until after they shoot you. And it doesn't make sense to me. That's enough said. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner. So let me just address two of your points. The first point about our process and having this quiet period and this sealed kind of closed bid, I think the benefit of that is making sure that commissioners don't go awry and start calling staff saying, gee, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I think I'm happy to open our procurement process and have a lively debate about it. But one of the things I think that creates the integrity of the process is allowing staff to evaluate and to make recommendations to the commission without having pressure put on them by commissioners. And I know in the past, if you go back into some history of the port, the more we have commissioners pressing issues for companies to get jobs and what have you, the more risk you have in ethical violations and things like that. I'm happy to open our procurement process for commissioners to review and to debate, but I think that's kind of why we have it set up the way we do. In terms of your second point, I agree totally with you that maybe there needs to be better communication, you know, prior to the posting of an agenda item, so that people know, you know, who did what to who. And I think that's, again, part of the process that we need to look at. And I understand there's some other commissioners that want to have comments. So let's go ahead and any commissioners, you have comments? I understand Commissioner Crizeau has a comment. Are you there?
Question, Chairman. I just want to be clear. I thought the gentleman that spoke during the appearance was from Triple B Services. So was he referring to item number 4 as opposed to 6?
Item 6.
No, he was item number 6.
Item number 6, Commissioner Crizeau, if you're looking at your book, has been updated with a subsequent email that was sent early last week.
All right, thank you.
Any other comments from commissioners? Questions?
Hi. Rich Tyler, question, just I guess a comment, not on item 6, but on infrastructure in general.
Mm-hmm.
Roger, I would ask that y'all give us an update on the status of all the projects south of Port Road at Bayport. I've kind of lost track on where we're at on the rail spur and the refrigerated warehouse project that was on board for a while. And I think it would be timely the next meeting if you would give us a report to the commission on where we're at on all those projects south of Port Road.
We can absolutely do that. But an update, we can do it at the next commission meeting, however we need to do that. But certainly I think it's timely. Or if you want it now, we can give it to you now. But
I would like a comprehensive report with you sending us some drawings and such
as that
next meeting, if you don't mind.
Well, we can send you some. We can send out that information and have a discussion at the next meeting.
Okay. Any other comments from commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, Clyde. I could hear you. Now I can't. Why somehow you did something. Okay. Kelly, can you reach out to Clyde and find out what's going on?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. We'll wait for him for a second.
While we're waiting, this will commit to me, so I will be voting for all of the numbers except 6, and I will be voting against 6.
Yeah, what I'll do is separate those, commissioners, so you don't have to vote. We'll separate it so it's clear, okay? We have Clyde on here anymore? Mr. Chairman?
Can you, Mr. You hear me?
I can now. Go ahead. Something's happening when he's speaking.
Oh dear.
Technology is great when it works. Sort of feels like when you're streaming a movie and then it stops. Clint, is that you?
Always at the good part.
I know. Tell Clyde you can, is that you there, Clyde? I see W. No? And who's the W?
That's me.
Oh, Wendy. I'm sorry, Wendy. There you go. Do you have a comment?
Here, Clyde.
You for now, wait for Clyde.
Oh, good.
Okay. Barely. Okay. All right. So here's what we're going to do. Clyde just said, go ahead. And Clyde, if you want to text me, I can read your text and maybe we can communicate that way on my cell phone. Okay. So, we're going to take items, I through 18, and we're going to exclude item I6. So is there a motion to approve items 1 through 18 and excluding item 6?
So move.
Okay, is there a second?
Okay.
Okay, any negative votes on items 1 through 18 excluding item 6? Items 1 through 18 excluding item 6 are approved. Okay, so let's go back to item I6. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll move.
Okay. Are there any negative votes for item 6?
I vote no.
Any other negative votes? Okay, item 6 passes with one negative vote from Commissioner Meese. Okay, Tom, would you move us to operations?
Sure. So in operation, there are 7 items. I'd like to highlight 4 of them. The first one is J2. It's to approve the staff ranking for a contract with Coney Crane for the purchase of 9 electric container yard cranes, or better known as hybrid RTGs. These are going to be for container yard 2 at Bayport, which will be coming to you in the next month or so to be to approve the construction of container yard 2. This will give us about 107 RTGs when we get these. The second one is J3, and it is staff ranking to contract with Briggs Equipment for the purchase of 7 empty container handling machines. These machines will be used at Barber's Cut. We currently have 17, but we need to surplus about 8 of those. There's 2 from 1996 and 3 from 1997 that definitely need to be replaced. They've gone through their useful lives. The next one is J6, and this is the assignment of the lease and the freight handling agreement from Coastal Cargo to Gulfstream Marines at Care Terminal. Logitech purchased Gulfstream about a year ago and is now purchasing the assets of Coastal Cargo of Texas. And finally, back in April, the commission approved a COVID-19 relief measure for our customer, and that went through the end of June. We would like to extend that through August 31st. And what that is the extension of the 3 days extra for import container storage and the extra 30 days on current invoices in terms of credit, to extend the credit. So that is what we have. I'd like to ask the commission to approve J1 through J8. But before I do that, last month you asked about the cost that we have spent on this COVID-19. We have spent about a $1.5 million actually to date, but we've committed closer to $3 million. And the way that's broken down is cleaning of buildings and property is about $1 million. Our program of taking temperatures of everybody coming into all the terminals is about $1.5 million. Supplies is about $500,000. And then the rest is things like we had to rent some tents and vans to make all of the temperature checking work. So I just wanted to report on that since you asked about that last month. So again, we're asking for approval of J1 through J8.
Is there a motion, commissioners?
So moved.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Number two, Tom, do we have any data on how much emissions reduction the hybrid RTGs are going to give us?
I do not have that handy. I can get that.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
All right. We will get that and report back.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dean, what I can say is that, you know, we're replacing a big diesel engine that's powering every move to a very small diesel engine, and it's basically using the energy that from lowering the spreader bar. You know, it's a tremendous reduction in not only emissions but fuel usage, maybe as much as 90%. But we'll give you the right answer. Okay. All right.
Paul, let me. Is there any application for LNG fuel on any of these yard cranes? Have we looked at that at all?
You know, we've looked at LNG and compressed natural gas and stuff over the years. The problem is the amount of storage capacity that you have to have and fueling and the safety aspect of that. It just really hasn't been a technology that's involved yet for that application.
Okay.
Tremendous amount of storage, tremendous amount of you know, fueling issues, but I'm not going to say it's evolved, but it's not going to evolve. But you know, this is a tremendous technology that we're employing now.
So, thank you.
I think Dean's point is exactly you know, what was earlier, which is we really need to make sure we're publishing the data on you know, sort of mission controls. I mean, we're spending, you know, a huge amount of money, obviously, on these new electric yard cranes, and we need to understand exactly what the emissions were before and what the emissions are now, so we can show the changes, obviously, and that's going to be important for us to document. Any other questions from commissioners on items 1 through 8?
Mm-hmm. So if I want to talk, I appreciate
it. I think Commissioner Fitzgerald might be there now.
Commissioner Fitzgerald, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can. Welcome.
Okay, good. Good morning, everybody. Hey, I apologize for all the issues here. I'm in favor of this motion, but are we voting now on which one?
Well, we're just having comments about
items
1 through 8, and we haven't had a motion yet, but we're going to have one in a minute.
I'm good. I'll make a motion that we adopt them.
Okay. Items 1 through 8, the motion's been made. Yeah, second?
Second.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on items 1 through 8 on operations, J1 through 8? If not, I'll call for negative votes. Any negative votes? Hearing none, items J1 through 8 pass. Thank you. We have no items under people, no items under port security emergency operations, and we have item technology. Tom, you want to go through technology?
So technology, there are 3 items. They're all related to licensing and software renewals. One is the firewall with our Palo Alto firewall. One is for the Veeam server software. And the other one is for the Anflapax. I don't know how to say that really. IP address software. So we are asking the commission to approve items, the software and licensing items M1 through M3.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any comments or questions about items M1 through 3? Hearing none, are there any negative votes on items 1 through 3 in technology? Hearing none, items M1 through 3 pass. And I guess next we are going to recess to recess the open meeting and convene an executive session. And so everyone should have, all the commissioners and folks who are going to be involved in the executive session know how to do it. Hopefully we'll be able to get that done. Others, you can stay on the call and then we'll come back to this call after we're done.
Commissioner, I'm just, Chairman, I'm just going to read the statement before we go into it. Okay. So it is now 10:45 a.m. and the Port Commission, the Port of Houston Authority will now convene a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings and Open Government Code to conduct a private consultation with its attorneys regarding claims against Richardson Steel and amendments to the agreements for legal services with Baker Botts, Bracewell, Lawyer Miller, Hill Rivkins, and Alan Hoagland, and real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut, Bayport Terminal, Beltway, and Turning Basin vicinity property. Economic development negotiations or incentives, employment or evaluation of public employees, and security related matters. And the Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, good. Okay, let's go ahead and get into executive session, commissioners and others. Let's go ahead and reopen the Port Commission meeting at 11:12 a.m. Central Time. Eric, go ahead and then let's do what we need to do from the executive session.
Okay, I have a motion that I would ask a commissioner to adopt to authorize the Port Authority to settle with Richardson Steel Yard, Inc. on the terms discussed in executive session and authorize the executive director to all things necessary to give effect to the Port.
Second.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments? Hearing none, are there any negative votes on the item? If not, items pass.
Okay, the next one is to authorize the Port Authority to enter into or amend agreements for legal services with Baker Botts, Boyer Miller, Bracewell, Hill Rivkins, and Mr. Alan Hoagland on the terms discussed in executive director and authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect.
Motion by Cloud.
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments from commissioners? Hearing none, are there any negative votes on the item? Hearing none, the item passes. Okay, that is it for our executive session, I believe, Eric. And then in terms of, we are going to do a regular code of conduct and ethics training at this meeting. But before that, I would like to just ask Roger, you have some closing comments?
Yes, Chairman, I do. I want to take just a moment to congratulate one of our colleagues who I see is on the line today, Tom Schroeder. I see you're there today. Tom is retiring effective July the 1st. After, I believe, I don't have all the information in front of me, Tom, but I believe at 19 solid years at Port Houston, and I want to just personally thank you for your service, for your friendship, for your passion for the job, and everything you've done for Port Houston during your tenure. And, we're going to miss you, but we want you to stay in touch, and I want you to know that all of the adventures that we've had together, and just forgive me for everything that I've ever said to you about lawyers. So anyway, I appreciate you, and I think I speak on behalf of the port. Thank you for your service.
And let me just add that we will miss Tom greatly, and we very much appreciate all the work and blood, sweat, and tears he's put into the job.
Great. Okay.
Tom, are you there?
I'm here. Thank you very much, commissioners and Roger and Eric. And I'm leaving the port, but you'll always be in my thoughts and prayers forever. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Congratulations, Tom.
Yeah. Okay. It's great to celebrate long-term employment and people who created and added value to our community. Commissioners, before we go into our training, any comments or questions, or just open platform for you to address the meeting?
I want to know what Roger
what he said about lawyers. Shakespeare's quote or something.
It's personal, and statute of limitations is probably passed. So.
Oh my goodness.
Any other commissioners want to make a comment before we end on the
Mr. Chairman, this is Clyde again.
Yep.
Since I couldn't speak earlier, I just want to thank Roger and his staff. We had talked about many times of all the port people going to work during this virus situation. And, the longshoremen kept going to the docks, and we had a few get sick right in the beginning. But Roger and his whole staff did a tremendous job of cleaning and bringing in disinfectants, had everything properly so that the men and women felt comfortable going to work. And I think it protected many, many of them who could have got sick otherwise. And the port spent a whole lot of money. But I just want you to know the ILA did too. Probably the local ILA spent a couple hundred thousand dollars testing our people, our own people, just trying to make sure that we kept the job going. And so far, we've been very successful. But I can't say enough about the job that the port did to make sure that everybody was protected and felt comfortable. I just want to thank them.
That's okay. It. Any other commissioners?
Rick, I'd just like to close with, I appreciate your remarks on the social justice item that I think that's something that we pay attention to going forward. And I appreciate you putting it on the agenda.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
I second that.
Roger as well.
Well, the port has an obligation to support the community. We do it through jobs. We do it through all of our programs. And I think we have the resources to do a great job and a better job in pursuing these items of social justice, environmental justice, and economic justice. And it's the events that have happened over the last month are not, it's not the first time it's happened. It's not the first time we've had protests and what have you. But it is a time where, because of the pandemic and just the way the world is today, we need to seize this moment and create a lot more momentum going forward than has been in the past. And I think that you don't want to lose what did Churchill said, that you never want to lose lose the momentum for a great crisis or something like that. But it's just the right thing to do as well. So we just need to focus on it.
And in that, thank you to everybody that has worked on this community grants program. I have sent it out, and there's a lot of folks excited about it, so I hope we get some good projects out of it. So thank you to everyone that's worked on that to get it going to where it is.
There you go. Okay, great. Well, if there's no other comments from the commissioners, we will go ahead and Eric, let's go through our regular code of ethics training and review.
Absolutely. Okay, so I will try to make this move along briskly here. Okay, so, and I've provided to commissioners a PowerPoint, and that would be available to members of the public if they want to see it. The code itself is available online on our web, porthouston.com website. And this is just really a summary of the port provisions, and I would give credit to my colleague Dave McNamara for putting this together. The code really provides minimum requirements. Obviously, we look to the commissioners and our staff to
to always, you know, act in the highest morality and hold our banner high. There's a statement of purpose, and basically we're committed to lawful and ethical activities. We place public interest above private interest. We strive to instill confidence and integrity and gain public trust and act, of course, in accordance with law and regulation and policy. So just a recap, just sort of big picture executive summary. Article 3 talks about obeying laws. Article 4 addresses conflicts of interest. I think that's really an item that I think public servants are particularly concerned with, and the public particularly expects us to address. I think, you know, historically, not really at the port, thankfully, but I think just in generally, that's always a big issue. Article 5 addresses using a position of public trust to gain benefits. So, for example, gifts, misuse of property, nepotism, things like that. We have some rules on former commissioners and employees. And then finally, and then really I think it's appropriate here today and given the comments, we have a strong policy we've had many years not to discriminate, harass, or retaliate. So moving on to the conflict of interest provisions. Really, we've put it in place as basically an equation, and a conflict of interest equals a substantial outside interest that a person might have, employer, commissioner, and a special economic effect. So essentially, if an employee or a commissioner has either a close relative or themselves has this potential interest on them, and that could be a business or a property that they own, then we need to look at whether there is a conflict. And so obviously we want to avoid it. What that means, and I think this is common sense for all of us, that we don't participate in the action where we could be exercising judgment. And it's simple enough to recuse. I'll just give an example. In years past, sometimes when we have a pipeline license, a commissioner, or for that matter, an employee might have a stock interest in one of the oil and gas companies here. And so it's a simple matter to just recuse from acting on that particular item, i.e. the pipeline license. And then in some circumstances, we require disclosure. And so again, I go back to the sort of the basic rule. If you have a question, the attorneys are available to address whether there is a conflict or not a conflict. Just to continue along, there's some interesting items that we've adopted from statute. One could be commissions, and that's been in our policy for a long time. Another one, which is a little unusual, acting for a bond surety, making investments that could create a substantial interest. And again, not just to use an example off the top of my head, that might be owning a piece of property where we might potentially have a facility. I don't think that's happened with the Port Authority, but I think we've all seen or heard of those examples happening. And then finally, one that we've added in recent years, but again, I think it's more appropriate for state agencies to act as a lobbyist. And then a related one to be involved in a maritime trade association. And again, that's a pretty standard provision for state agencies that they don't want their board members to be on a trade organization. And we've adopted that as well. So now just to drill down a little bit further, if again, this is a very unusual circumstance, and I've not seen it in my years, but just to bring it to your attention, if a commissioner or an employee owned a piece of property that we were going to acquire, then that has to be disclosed and there has to be an affidavit filed. Now moving on to another topic, abuse of public office. So it's a little, you know, it's related obviously to conflicts, but it's moving on really, and I mentioned it's another article. So using a status as a public servant for monetary gain or other benefits, influencing government decisions for personal gain, or the catch-all that lawyers love to have, bringing discredit to the Port Authority. And so drilling down again a little bit, commissioners and employees shouldn't solicit or accept benefits for their actions. And earlier on, I think when we talked about the code of silence that we've adopted, I think Again, I can't relate any particular instances where this was an issue, but you know, clearly one of the reasons why there's a code of silence for some portion of a procurement activity is to make sure that an employee, for example, can't you know, say, hey, give me some tickets and I'll make the right decision or something like that. And so very obviously that's one of our prohibitions. That's an absolute prohibition. Now, having said that, there are some instances, and this is in the state law, where there are some exceptions. For example, you might be paying, and I think we've heard these in the paper, I'm not familiar with it, but I mean, you might have a contractor, for example, who also just happens to be doing your roof in your house and you're paying full price for it. Now, as we all know, that could be a area of criticism if it came up. We've read these things in the paper. So it's something that, you know, it's a touchy area, but clearly if you're paying full consideration. I'll give another example of that. If a utility company is asking for an easement or a license from us, and you just happen to have a contract with the utility company, I think that'd be one of the ones that would be subject to that exception that really wouldn't be open to criticism. You might be able to accept a benefit from someone who is who you previously had a relationship. For example, you had a friend for many years who takes you out to dinner. But again, we need to be careful about those things. Political contributions, again, that's not really an issue with non-elected officials like the Port Commission. And then finally, benefits for under non-cash benefits under $50. So that's sort of a catch-all, but again, it's something that we need to be careful about. For example, I'll give you an example, and the employees have some stricter rules on this, but the state law basically said, just an example, for example, you attend a seminar and then you get seminar materials sent to you gratis and that are worth less than $50. I mean, that would be an obvious example of something where we would get a benefit, but permitted to keep the materials. There's also meals that are permitted, but again, our employees in particular have some stricter rules about that. And then a benefit from a government agency. One other point in terms of it related to dollars, and I'll just mention this in passing because I think all the commissioners are aware of this, our commissioners are required to file annual financial statements with the state and with the Port Authority. And this year, because of the pandemic, that date has been extended to the end of July. But if you haven't, I would still recommend doing it sooner rather than later for those who have not done it. Moving on, continuing on the benefits side, when a commissioner who appears or an employee appears at an event and would receive an honorarium needs to be very careful about that, because generally there is a ban on that, but that might exclude things like, you know, a meal that you're eaten before you speak publicly or something like that. Moving on to nepotism. This is something, once again, that I think is common sense, but I will reiterate it. Commissioners, there's a strict ban on the Port Authority hiring commissioner relatives. On employees, we have some employees who have family members, and so what we've done in employees, and this is something after going through some back and forth on the issue, an employee who has a family member who is looking for a job or maybe already hired must not be involved in the either the hiring or the employment decisions. And so there is an exception for personal attendance. I guess obviously a person with disability might be talking about that. Next we move to outside employment, and we obviously permit it in limited circumstances. It can impair independence, can hinder performance. Our senior management group, which is the chief officers plus some other folks who actually are participating in this briefing, must receive permission from Roger Gunther in order to accept any outside employment. And then finally, Roger himself would need to receive commission approval, and I believe that is in his contract. Moving on to former commissioners and employees, again, an obvious provision. If we worked on something while we were at the Port Authority, we can't work on it when we leave. I think that's pretty clear cut. We also have a provision that bans when an employee either retires or moves on, we can't rehire that person, for example, in a consulting contract until a 6-month period goes. And again, it's an attempt not only to address potential conflicts, but it also to so that there's no games playing with letting people retire and then hiring them back. I think we've heard of those kind of things too. I have not really experienced that in an abusive way here, but we have had some circumstances where a person retired and then plus a year later might have special knowledge. And I know my own company did that with me about 10 or 12 years ago, and I got approval. And then finally, commissioners and the executive director, there's a 2-year ban on communications with an intent to influence. Once again, it's really to address potential lobbying. Moving on to the last couple of more code of ethics type items. There's a ban on the misuse of public property, and we've all heard of people using, let's say, public assets for personal gain, whether that's equipment or things like that. So that's a prohibition on that. On the other hand, you'll be happy to know that we do allow, if you get airline points for flying, you can probably keep them, though I don't know what use you'd have for them in the current environment. In terms of confidential and official information, we need to be wary of using the information that we gain through our employment or our service to help someone obtain benefit, and so, or to harm someone else. And again, we read about these things in the paper. I'm not aware of that happening here, but it's something we need to keep in mind always, and we certainly do. And then finally, sort of circling back to what I talked about a little earlier, talking about discrimination, harassment, and retaliation. For many, many years, and this has been a policy of the Port Authority for as long as we can all remember, we have a policy to promote respect, equality, and safety and prevent discrimination. We have an equal opportunity and retaliation policy. We have unlawful harassment, and we have misconduct reporting policy. And we do have periodic training more specifically on these items. On the last one on misconduct, as you know, we also have a misconduct line that our chief auditing officer monitors, and I actually get those too. And in appropriate circumstances, those get reported to our audit committee. So that's an independent pathway to address that. And sometimes we get periodic reports of that and we investigate them. We also, and again, this is something we read about, in retaliation, obviously can prevent people from reporting misconduct. And so we have a ban on retaliation, and that's something that I think we take very seriously as well. That's not only a in our policy, but there's also there's provisions of this in the Texas law. Finally, having said all that, and really to wrap up, we have this policy in many respects echoes Texas law, and Dave, when he worked on the last, Dave McNamara, when we worked on the last iteration of this, helpfully included the citations to that for those who want to actually go and look at the law. And so there are penalties in Texas law for violating various provisions of our code of ethics, but we also have internal penalties, and basically they're not that dissimilar for commissioners or employees. Obviously, in a commissioner case, it would be commission that would levy it, and an employee would be supervisors or the executive directors. But in each case, it could be a reprimand. For employees, it could be suspension, or for commissioners or employees, it could be a removal from either service or employment. And then finally, and this is not, I think we're very lucky, this has not really happened, again, in few, if any, instances, but for contractors who take place, who participate in a violation, we can terminate their contracts and ban them for future authority business, both for a period of time or for an extended, for a lifetime, although I'm not aware of the latter. But I think in an egregious case, and I can think of somewhere as a practical matter that's happened, where there's been many years ago, some things that were that egregious. So that really wraps up in a nutshell our code of ethics. Obviously the detail is in the policy itself. If you have any questions, again, just general questions or questions where specific instances and out of an abundance of caution, you're seeking guidance, I ask that you ask either David or I. I also would mention Kenny Friedman, where there are items that may be also a sensitive item. One of Kenny's jobs is to also advise the Port Commission on these types of matters. And I would encourage you, if you're uncomfortable or otherwise think it's not appropriate for a staff attorney to discuss these items with Kenny. So that wraps it up. If there are any questions, I would ask them if speak up, please.
Thanks, Eric. This is Kenny. I would add that I would encourage the commissioners to err on the side of caution here. You folks are doing this as a community service at no compensation, and I would hate for anyone to be accused of doing something improper, because I know no one would deliberately do that. So please err on the side of caution and be sure and ask a lawyer about that, about any questions that you have that may be even close. We're happy to help.
I would echo that. I think that the key to public service is to make sure that we are definitely not just the letter of the law, but even beyond the letter of the law. Because at the end of the day, given that we have really no financial interest in our service, the only thing we have that we can protect that's very important and critical is our reputation. And when you get sideways of ethics or open meetings or anything like that, there's just no upside in being in that area. And so, having kind of been involved in public service like this for now, I'm going on 25 years, I've learned that when in doubt, just do the right thing, which is making sure that you know what the rules are and where they are, and the right thing to do oftentimes is to raise your hand, ask someone, ask Kenny, ask Eric, and if anyone needs to talk to me about any of those issues, I'm happy to have that discussion as well. It's sometimes a complicated area to navigate, just because an example would be like if someone asks if one of our commissioners knows someone who wants to do business with the port or is doing business with the port and has an issue with the port, I have no problem, and I think it's just fine for someone to mention that to a commissioner, and then the right response is to direct that question or introduction or comment or whatever it is to Roger, and let Roger deal with it as the CEO should deal with any issue, whether it be a new a contractor relationship or a problem with the contract or anything like that. Our job is to communicate that to the proper person, which would be Roger, and then let Roger handle it. And then once Roger's in the handling part of it, commissioner steps away from that equation. And so I know that we haven't had any issues at the port, since I've been chairman, and hopefully we won't in the future. And I think it's all incumbent upon each commissioner to understand what the law is, and in fact, serve within the constructs of that. So, commissioners, any other comments or questions? I think, Eric, don't you have documents that have to be signed by the commissioners that are in the email you sent? Eric? Hopefully everybody's still on.
Adobe, for their, we also have an Adobe form. I sent out a Word form to make it just a little easier. Most people have that have that functionality, but we'll follow up in a few days and make sure that we and help out and make sure we can get those and collect those.
Okay, great. Commissioners, any questions or comments?
Yeah, we get an hour's credit for this ethics class.
You get a what?
An hour's credit for the ethics class towards our bar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right, so the next meeting we're having is July the 30th, next Port Commission meeting. It will be a virtual meeting, and we're gonna we'll talk about when we get back to a face-to-face meeting, but I'm pretty sure that it's not likely to happen until after, you know, Labor Day in the fall sometime, depending on what happens and how the summer progresses with what's going on with you know, spikes in cases of COVID-19. So I think it's been actually, you know, reasonably good in terms of with technology and what have you. And
it's been worth a buck.
Go ahead, Clyde.
No, I didn't say nothing.
Oh, I thought I heard you say something. Okay. All right. Well, so with that said, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
Motion.
Okay. Any negative votes on adjourning, or we can stay here all day? Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you.